I can see people in chat at the moment. Welcome. Thank you very much all for joining. So please make sure you go and use those commands that are sitting on the bottom left to learn all about Eric and his wonderful channel, and also to ask any questions if you wish to do so. So with that being started, what I normally do with my guests is I normally hand over a virtual mic. So I'm going to just get to about there-ish, and you can other way. Use the other hand. There we go. I hand over the virtual microphone, and what I normally get my guests to do is to answer. Do a little introduction in a minute or less about who you are and what you do. So I will pass it over to you.
All right. My name is Eric. I run the YouTube channel Eric for President. I enjoy long walks on the beach, bags in the wind, good beer every now and then. And I run a virtual reality channel where just talk about everything virtual reality, because it's a lot of fun to explore other worlds. And I like to goof off and do random stuff that I can't do in real life.
That sounded a little bit like a dating profile. I don't know if anyone else in chat agreed with me. I mean, to be fair, you like VR, so I feel a little bit happy at the moment. And
you had that little finger clip, so I didn't know what we were talking
exactly,
about.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. See, I thought I'd catch you off with that. That's what I said. So for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, I discovered Eric through chance, which sounds horrible, but it does have a happy ending, and I'm not going to wink after I say that. So essentially what happened was I was actually on holiday in Egypt, and it was just before everything kicked off with the Oculus Link software had actually landed. So whilst I was there, I was sort of browsing YouTube and stuff like that. And then I thought, I wonder if anyone's got any updates for the Oculus Link cable and kind of ideas. Lo and behold, first person who pops up, this guy. And I absolutely loved everything about the videos. They were very concise, exactly what he wanted. And he had all the links and all the relevant stuff. And from that moment, insta subscribe, insta bell hit. And I thought, right, this is the guy that I need for VR news. And honestly, Eric is fantastic at what he does. And I love his channel. He's brilliant in the community of VR. And if please go and subscribe, because if he gets my vote, he should get your vote as well. So there we go. See promotions. This is what it's about. So what I normally do with my guests is I normally do a little bit of a deep dive on their channel, and I've done a little bit of research. Nothing too personal, don't worry. Don't panic. So looking at your YouTube channel, you started it about a year and 8 months ago, which is fascinating considering the high level of your content at the moment. So what was the thought process when Eric for President was founded? And I guess the other question is, where did the name come from?
Dude, there's no thought process. That will answer everything.
Good answer.
I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, you look at my first video, it was like a rage gameplay. I had never filmed anything before, never recorded, never made a thumbnail in my life. I can't draw a stick figure. Like, I just wanted to do it. It was fun. And I met some really, really nice people on a Discord at one point that just wanted to chill, talk, and play games. And it just kind of blossomed from there. But the name, I just thought it was funny. I just thought it was really funny. I think at the time, I was at work and someone was having a political argument, because, you know, political arguments are never divisive, ever. And I just like, all right, Eric for President, that's the channel name.
Cool. Well, that's pretty to the point. I was expecting something really cool and elaborate, but to be honest, that does the job. So I'm kind of happy with that. Good job. So starting the YouTube channel, what was the kind of the reason for you starting it? What was the thing that made you pull the trigger and upload your first video? Which, can you remember what your first video is? Because I actually had a quick look.
Oh yeah, I remember that video by far. That was that rage gameplay for I don't know what game it was. It was some kind of like stick figure game that was really overly difficult. I don't know why I chose that game, but yeah, that was definitely my first video. And that's an embarrassing video.
I highly recommend everyone go and watch it, is all I'm gonna say, because if you look at Eric's first video to like now, the leap in production values has just like exponentially grown. So it was hilarious to see that.
It really was just a fun hobby at times, just learning how to do stuff. Like the initial, I don't know how long it was, but probably the first, up until I was on camera talking just directly to the camera, I think every one of those gameplay videos was filmed by iPhone. So it was just a lot of fun learning how to do it on my iPhone, where I filmed it in 4K on an iPhone, so I could only film 10 minutes at a time. And I was recording for an hour and 20 to get 10 minutes of gameplay. So you can imagine the learning that you learn very quick when having to do stuff like that.
Do you know what? It's fascinating you saying that, because I spoke with another guest in my last podcast, and we were actually talking about how, you know, years ago, if you wanted to do video editing or even making video, you know, you'd have to invest a lot of money in, you know, a big camera and big infrastructure to edit it and stuff like that. And the fact that, you know, your phone now can just become this thing that can, you know, take amazing 4K footage and edit and upload directly from it is just, you know, if, I'm sure if you went into the past and just dropped in like the 1900s and just went, hey, I can do all this with it, they'd be like, oh, you're a witch. But yeah, it's amazing to think that you can have all that power in something that sits in your pocket. And yeah, that's probably why YouTubers, I mean, I've not looked at the stats, but if I was to guess, I'd probably say in the last probably 10 years, if you looked at the amount of content that's been loaded, there's probably this massive spike where video quality against obviously the tech that went with it kind of peaked at the same time. So, but yeah, I mean, that's interesting though that you used your phone. I know a few other YouTubers who actually use their phones as well. And to be honest, the quality is so good, you would never know.
You're going to do an insane amount on a budget. Like everyone, you know, obviously, depending on the phone you have, but I had the phone, the computer that I already owned, and I think I bought the webcam I'm using right now, which I think was like $30.
Right.
And that was my setup. And I had no idea what I was doing. And I literally, at the time I was in a similar job role, but I had a lot more free time. So I just spent every second of the day just Googling how the hell to do anything. Like my entire history feed was tutorial videos of everything.
That's a strong history feed then. But yeah, I think we've all been there where it's been like, especially like Photoshop or video editing. It's like, how do I do? Oh yeah, that's how you do it. Oh, how do I do it? And then you suddenly build this repertoire of just stacks of bookmarks in your Outlook, in your browser of just how to do things that you always go back to. I did that especially with video editing. Even though I studied video editing, stuff like keying green screens out correctly. Oh yep. Boy, the hours I took to try and get every little bit out is just, in fact, it's starting to bring back a bit of university PTSD.
But you feel pretty damn good about it, don't you?
Afterwards? Oh yeah.
You feel like you accomplished something and now you know it and you'll never not know it.
Yeah, there's that point where you've done it and you're just like, I did it. The green is gone and it looked awesome. But yeah, so going into kind of your VR, because I mean, I was looking through your channel and the majority of it was kind of, your indie games and kind of some other games. And then you kind of made this transition to VR. So what was kind of your journey into VR, I guess, as discovering it yourself?
So anyone who follows my channel or like follows my Twitter feed, especially, I love anime. Like I just love it. It's a fun escape. Bang. And you know, yeah, exactly. Right back there. And to everyone in my videos, love it. And then you have like the anime isekai trope of, you know, going into another virtual world, and it's fun stuff. And it just, I always watch those, and someone was like, hey, you know, the headsets are getting now a little more affordable and better. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just picked up I picked up the Vive, and I remember sitting on my floor. There was like the open, you know, like Oculus Home. I know you have a Rift and the Quest, you have your home, and the Vive, you have your home as well. And I put on the headset, and I just sat on the floor, and it was pretty damn cool. For like 30 minutes, I'm just like walking around, not even playing games. My wife or fiance at the time came in, and she did the same thing, and I fell in love with it after that. So at that point, I'm like, I'm sold. I actually haven't played a 2D or a PC game, I think, since, and it's just been all VR.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, my discovery of it was, I kind of sit on the fence when it comes to new tech, and you know, obviously things like the Rift came out and stuff like that. And the price point was just out of reach, I think, for me at the time. And I remember years ago, I went to a big store in London called Harrods. And they had this Oculus Rift set up. And I kind of looked and I went, oh, that's kind of nice and stuff like that. And I remember that, oh, they were like, oh, do you want to have a go? And I thought, yeah, I've got 10 minutes to kill, fine. And I remember putting the headset on and then just seeing my hands in VR for the first time, and I was like, this is cool. And then I can't remember which game I was playing. I was just like throwing bolts of like fire and electric, and my brother was watching me, and I can hear him behind me laughing. And I was like, okay, so clearly he can see what's going on. So I'm like, okay, that's cool.
There is nothing like, even someone who plays VR, like jumping into it sometimes is a hassle. Like sometimes I'm just like, I'm just gonna sit my ass on the couch and not play. But like when you, even if you've never played it or if you played it, like once you get it on, you remember like, oh yeah, this is why I love it. Like, but you got to get it on. And then it just blows people away.
Well, it's funny you say that, because on New Year's Eve, I had a couple of people over at my my apartment, and I got the Quest out. I kind of hooked it up to my Chromecast in my living room, and I said, have a go at Beat Saber. And they were like, oh, seems a bit boring. So, and I was like, trust me, try it once, and then tell me it's not the most amazing thing ever. After one song, they were like, yeah, going again, going again, going again. And I was like, yeah, guys, you need to actually go home. Can I actually have my can I have my Oculus Quest back, please? Because this is getting a bit too much. Also, for anyone in chat who hasn't noticed, Crash is actually wearing my Oculus Quest because he's a bad man. So
yes.
There we go. He's into VR. See, he's caught up with times. So going back to your channel, what made you do the transition from kind of you streaming games to you doing the news? What was kind of that flow looking like?
Well, the honest answer is I got more views on one of them. I mean, I'm not gonna lie about that. But I also found I like playing. I'm a very big completionist in games. Like Asgard's Wrath, I've got like 30 hours in already, and I think I'm on the second god because I just like exploring every nook and cranny, collecting everything, finishing everything in an area before moving forward to the most you can. And you can't do that when you're playing games on YouTube or Twitch, because no one wants to watch that.
No, absolutely. And
as much as I do enjoy being a showman at times, I talk too much and have a lot of fun being extra. I still would like to
extra.
If I'm gonna play, very extra. if I'm gonna play, there's not that, you know, VR games. It's not like I have a PC game library of thousands. The VR library is a little shorter by a large degree. I don't want to spend, if I'm going to play that game, I want to play it my way, since I don't have the option to do it otherwise.
Sure.
So that's kind of the main switch.
That's a very good point, actually. And it's not something I actually thought of before, but that's a very, very good point you raised. I mean, one of the more common problems that I find with modern day gaming is that, you know, whether you buy it physical or download, if we separate it as normal gaming and VR, with normal games, you pay a very high premium, and once that game's done, that's it, right? But I often find that with VR, you can constantly go back to it, no matter how short that game is, and discover new little ways to play, little nuances. The updates that come out to the VR games almost, you know, in some cases, dramatically change the game. And for myself, obviously, I love retro as well, and that has a similar feel where, you know, okay, you're not getting updates to that retro game, but you used to pay a premium, but get a premium output where you could constantly go back and replay these things. And I find that VR has that, whereas normal gaming, kind of just, you know, besides a multiplayer thing where you may have to pay a lot more for additional other things in the game, Fortnite, you know, you may have to go back and actually spend another a cost again for the game just to enjoy it. But
it also depends though on how you, I don't know, man, I'm sorry, I can't cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I come in your podcast and just become rude.
No, do it, man. Do it.
I don't know, like, so even though the people say VR games don't have a lot of content, like, yeah, okay, some of them really don't, I can't argue. Yeah, some of them are just one and done, like, you're right. But even the ones that seem one and done, it's like, did you beat it or did you just play through it? Because, like, I can go play Pavlov every single night. And, yeah, I know it's multiplayer, so technically the game's different. But until I go 100 kills and zero deaths in a round, there's always something to do. You know what I mean? There's always a way in a game you could do it better, do it differently. That's why there's a lot of replayability in VR, because, like, it's your body. Like, you probably could have done something better and different.
Exactly, and I guess a perfect example of that is Boneworks, right? I mean, there's so many different ways of doing levels. I mean, that game caused me to have a mind of rage and nearly throw my Rift out of the window. That aside, it is a brilliant game, and they've actually played on the fact that you have this kind of physical body. If you've not seen Boneworks, please go and have a look for it in YouTube or anywhere, or you can go and watch my stream. cheap plug. But you actually have like a physical body, so if you look at yourself up and down, you kind of have legs and you can see your arms and stuff, and it's a bit like having an exoskeleton. It's very weird, but you can actually like pull yourself up and maneuver yourself in like how you would in real life. And it's nice to see that kind of sandbox play where you can kind of take one example of a level of how you would do it, but finish it in a completely different way. So, again, that brings the replay value. So you're not just bought one thing and it's done. There's constantly
VR adds like a couple different mechanics too that you actually, well, a lot of different mechanics, but things that you can't do in traditional games. So like when I play Boneworks, Blade and Sorcery, Pavlov. There's enemies all around you. Well, in a traditional gaming, unless there's a mechanic built into the game, which very rarely, what you're going to attack is what's going to be in front of you. But in VR, that's not your limit. So you can find different ways to take a corner, take someone down. And I've numerous times taken my hand, put it behind my head in shock because I knew someone's behind me. And I hear a couple pings into the body, turn around, he's dead. You can't do that in other games. And finding different ways to incorporate the realize you have 360 degrees to mess with around you. If you can do it in your body, you can do it in the game. That's some cool stuff.
I must say that the first time I tried the Quest, it was like experiencing VR again for the first time. Not being tethered and stuff like that was just a very surreal moment. And I remember playing Vader Immortal. I was just like, hang on a minute. What is this magic? And it was like completely experiencing something new again. And I don't think you get that level of experience through, you know, common gaming. There's just something about using your own body whilst you're gaming that's just something brilliant. Unless you're that guy playing Beat Saber who attached his controller to that like hand USB. Yeah. That guy's an OG for life. To crack a game like that, brilliant. If you've not seen that video, Eric for President actually tweeted it on his Twitter channel, so perfect reason to go and check it out. But it is it is a very good video. But again, it's a perfect example of where the technology is advancing at such a rate that the level of enjoyment is completely catching up to it.
And it's a whole different type of enjoyment too. I mean, you bring in a Vader, I mean, for all the, you know, what people think of the game, I remember when the first time you get to use the Force powers, it's not really a spoiler, you're a Jedi, you get to use Force powers.
Yeah.
And the first time you use it, I mean, they're not anything intricate. I mean, it's, you know, you play the game, it is what it is. But I still got a lot of weird enjoyment. Like, at first I did it, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of stupid. And then I was like, okay, well, I just threw naturally my hand out like that, and I gripped for no reason. I know I'm not doing anything. And I'm like, okay, this was fun.
Yeah, I remember playing it. In fact, I actually streamed all three episodes. And it's the first part when you get it's a bit of a strange-looking lightsaber, but you get the lightsaber, and you click that button, and then you hear it, and you're like, it was worth it just for that. And then you kind of wave it and you get the sound traveling between each ear and, you know, just deflecting bullets. But, and I was like,
and even when you put the lightsaber down, it left some smoke out.
That's right.
Smoke would move, like, it's that detailed.
Yeah. I mean, if you've not experienced that, everyone, please go and try it. Even if it's probably the best one is episode 3, I think, just because you get everything in the game in terms of the upgrades and stuff. But it is a fantastic thing. Also, the first time you meet Darth Vader and he's just standing there in front of
Dude, boy, it's built.
My man's been hitting that gym. He's been getting that protein shakes in as well. But yeah, it's fascinating to see the. I think it's a perfect example of where it's interactive entertainment, right? So they took the element of the film and then took the interactivity of VR and kind of crossed the two over, and it worked beautifully. Okay, as a game, it wasn't very technically detailed, but as an experience, I mean, I took my Rift around someone's house and I got them to play Vader Immortal, just the Jedi training bit, and they were just on it for ages. And I'm like, yeah, can I have my Rift back, my Quest back now? Because they were just completely sold and locked into it. So VR is brilliant. But coming on to the other side of VR, you mentioned something in a tweet. I think you may have retweeted one of my tweets about today. Was about the BBC article that came out not so long ago. So go on.
I'm not trying to start another war between.
I'm going to let you deep dive into this because I was ashamed of what the BBC had posted. I will put it like that.
Yeah, but it's no different than what's posted over here. They're all the same thing. Like I said in the video, look. I am an angry man half the time, so I would attack a journalist, but I don't know. We all know what the motives are, so at one point I can't, like, we know what the motives were. She wants to get clicks. She puts this out. What else was to be expected?
Exactly.
I mean, a video about how VR is doing, or excuse me, a article about VR doing amazing. How many people do you think would have read that?
Exactly.
So if there's a VR article about it doing good or bad, it's going to be bad. And at this point in time, if they had come out with the bad article before the Quest and before Half-Life Alyx, and it was 2020 right now, okay, we got problems. Mm. But since then, to not even bring those up, I don't think she had a strong argument. And it was pretty clear by what was brought up and what was not brought up that most likely because the BBC's virtual reality studio went down, now virtual reality sucks because it hurt me and gave me a boo-boo, and now I don't like it.
Yeah, no, do you know what? I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. I read through the article, and I read through it a few times, and a couple of colleagues at work looked at me and they were like, "You look really pissed off." And I was like, it amazes me that in 2020 someone can write an article like this. And it was only until a colleague kind of went, "Dean, breathe, don't rage. Hey, we kind of went through it again. He went, "Look at the content. It's clearly been written for clickbait." And I thought, actually, you've got a valid point there. But it just amazes me that you're probably right. There was obviously probably some other motive behind the whole thing. But if you read the article, I mean, there's so many things that were stated, which I'm just like, that's so not true. And like, if there was a comparison where they said, you know, this is what VR was meant to be, here's where we are, this is the problem and stuff like that. If they actually did a comparison of the now and what it should have been, yeah, okay, yep. You could maybe make that article actually seem a bit better. But I mean, yeah, the entire thing was just awfully
written. I don't care if someone makes a VR is dying article. Like, I don't care. And sometimes, depending on the angle they go about it, there is validity to what they might be saying, because VR dying compared to what was promised or projected by some VR companies themselves, they failed at those, some of them. Mm. So, and that, you know, there are angles where a VR dying article could have some validity. Not that I think it's dying, but you can pitch the article in a way that makes some logical sense. So I don't care if the articles start with those, but let's at least go over both sides, say what's out there. And if your opinion is just dying even after all that, fair. Don't fault you. But these articles usually are very one side.
The hilarious thing is that the BBC is supposed to be completely impartial and look at things from both sides. Wrong, no, BBC. No, you did no, not do no that.
I'm not even impartial. You can't be impartial.
Well, I mean, saying that, I mean, a few of your videos, I think you've very, very cleverly not got involved with some of the kind of more controversial topics within VR. But you take it. What I like about your channel is you kind of look at things as, here's the problem, and here's both sides, and here's my thoughts. And I think by doing that, you kind of look at things from both sides, and then you give your own opinion, which I think is a better way. And if the article was written in that kind of style, I don't think the community would have reacted in that way, because it would have actually been comparing apples for apples and so on and so forth. But as I said, just look, reading through the article again, I mean, it's just horrible.
The BBC falls into a trap because they've been doing it, and it's everybody. They fall into a trap because if you start out one way, getting clicks, things like that, now you always have to do that. So when I started doing the news, and I'm like, okay, what's the vision here? The vision is, I don't feel like seeing a tweet about how I'm an idiot and I'm causing a ruckus and just trying to cause controversy. So let's take the topic, both sides. If I have a clickbait headline and someone took that for fact, it's not on me, that's on them in my mind. You know, it is. It's, I expect my viewers to watch, not take the title as everything, listen, form their own opinions, and then go watch someone else's, not just mine.
Yeah.
That's the community I'm building. If you follow those rules, you'll love it. If you don't, you'll make your own opinions. I'll still love you. I don't care. But once you set those rules, you'll be fine. But, you know, BBC, a lot of these outlets have done it for so long, they're stuck in that mode.
No, totally. I could not agree with you more. Just to stop temporarily, a big shout out to everyone who's currently in chat. Thank you very much. I'm not ignoring you. I'm trying to listen to Eric. I promise you, I am aware of everything that's gone on. So thank you all very, very much. And my little robot then has been kind of like chatting to you guys as well. So he's doing his job. That's what he's there to do. Right. Two things I've got to ask is, when did you get that Mr. President sign behind you? And when did you introduce the OG member of your channel, which happens to be that DVD screen?
This is getting a little dusty.
Oh man,
this
need to clean up.
This was a Christmas gift from the wife. So
awesome.
Just got that recently. She gets very creative gifts, and I love this thing. And it's a good weapon, so if anyone comes in here.
So there you go. Don't attack his place.
It's got some pointy edges and some weight. And the DVD screensaver, I don't know where that came from. Like, legit, I think I had, it was an old computer. Legit, it turned on during the recording session. And then I saw the comments. And I was like, okay, it's staying. And it just was fun at that point.
That was the hilarious thing. I remember looking at your comments and suddenly people were like, yeah, the DVD video screensaver is the original OG of the channel. And then like that just started creeping up the comments. I was thinking, hang on a minute, he's onto something here. I like this.
It's got a life of its own at this point.
I think you should probably catch people out one time and like change the video to say something else or something, you know.
I like reading the comments. There's a conspiracy theory that I keep cutting the video every time it's about the hit. Oh. And while they might be right 40% of the time, this, you might see it. Any of your viewers might see this. It does cut itself at times. It just randomly stops and goes somewhere else. But there's a conspiracy theory that I'm purposely cutting all of them. And I might do that one day. It might happen.
That would be brilliant, actually. What a way to get people triggered. That's a secret for all of us who are.
I'm gonna wait until it gets right there. Yeah. Right there.
that's a secret between all of us, so don't let that out of the bag for everyone in chat.
Yeah.
So here's an interesting one for you. So as you know, I am kind of split between VR and retro. And what I have done is asked you beforehand your favourite retro game. And in the background we have Ocarina of Time. Running
great
in
game,
the background.
Best game.
There we go. So here we go. So in terms of your gaming memories, and I do ask my guests this as well, in terms of your gaming memories, what was your first ever gaming memory that you can remember in your head?
The one that hits the hardest was when my parents got me the SNES for Christmas. Because I remember ripping it open, freaking out. It came with Mega Man X at the time, which was way too hard of a game for a kid that age. You know, the Mega Man series, is those things are brutal.
Yeah, I stay away from them.
And to this day, never beat that game. But I will never forget getting that and getting that Mega Man game and playing it over and over and beating the damn eagle, beating the damn lizard, beating the damn armadillo, and getting wrecked by every other person.
Do you know, it's funny. one thing that I normally talk about with my guests is that and I guess this kind of ties into it. And I mean, one of the things with retro is you're starting to see, I mean, I've gone to a few retro events myself, and you don't get the same community with standard games where people kind of huddle together in the same room and stuff like that and play like we used to, you know, huddle around a console or a PC and stuff. The strange thing is now with VR, I almost seem like that resurgence is actually starting to come back, even though it may be digitally. But, you know, things like VR chat for communities and people talking together, and even the games themselves, the online community for VR right now, I think is probably one of the best communities out there in terms of support, helping each other out, kindness, just overall brilliant. Of course, there's a couple of edge cases, but that's in
any
community.
It's changing. I actually brought it up in a tweet last week, I think, or a couple of weeks ago, that I've been reading the comments on every channel, and it's getting much more rowdy, and not in a bad way. I'm not saying that's bad, but you can see it's a good sign. It's a sign of growth, because you're right, at the beginning when I started, for sure, and even before that, very tight-knit community, 30-40 people always talking to each other, very nice. And now you're seeing the influx of way more opinions, way more comments, thoughts, which some people need to learn to handle better, but it's a good thing. More discussion, more opinions, whether you disagree or not, it's better. I like where it's going.
I couldn't agree more. Right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to consult my iPad for the first time of all time, because as I mentioned, you can actually ask myself or Eric, more Eric than myself, most of you know me, a question. And if you put !pod question, you should get a link that takes you to a Google form, and basically you can drop questions in and I can read them directly from here. So I've had a few questions, so if I may, I will now refer to those. So Oculus Quest Fun has asked, what defines success as a VR content creator to you?
Oh man. Jump out with a deep question.
There we go, right? We're loading that gun quick.
Yeah, no, right? Existential life questions. I don't know. It's a weird question, because it's gonna be a weird answer then. All right. When you can upload a video or anything, and no matter what happens with it, whether it does well or bad, when you don't care anymore, that's when it's good. That's the good sign, because that's when I was starting to have fun. Like now, like I don't care anymore. I'm gonna make what I want to make. I like it. I'm doing my best to make sure it's what you guys want. But at the end of the day, if I'm happy with it and I put it up, it is what it is. However it does, I'm happy with it. But it didn't used to be like that. I used to get stressed over 24/7. And now I just go, this is me. And that's success, is that it's just, I'm doing it for me. I don't care about if there's a question saying I'm doing something wrong, okay. I just comment back, still love you. I always do it. No, any negative Any negative comment, still love you, brother. I don't care.
No, exactly. And I think that's a good point, because I think there's, I mean, I'm very irregular with uploading content into YouTube video rather than these podcasts, as people can agree. But I am a stickler for sitting there and painlessly going through the video going, I need to edit this, I'm going to change this, edit that, where I should have just gone, go for it, upload it, and forget about it, move on to the next one. So I think my resolution for 2020 will be exactly that. It's just getting it done, yeah, and getting it up.
Once you put it up, like, literally out of your hands.
Exactly.
Yeah. The only thing you can do now is delete it, and that does no good. But like, there's nothing you can do. So whatever happens, just move on.
Exactly. That's all you can do. Cool. Right. I will move on to question number two. It's from the username A Meme, which is interesting, but I will look over that.
Meme.
Yeah. the question is, how did you discover VR?
What was the first time? I think it was an anime. I knew of VR, like the cardboard. Who doesn't know, like, get it off the back of a cereal box.
I did have one. Oh, actually, I've got my Google Cardboard actually sitting up there, as we see.
Yeah. Like, you know, you pop it out the back of the cereal box, build it up, stick your phone in. But like, I knew of all that. But yeah, I think like the first time I played VR was at a GameStop, out of all places. It was in DC. It was one of those bigger flagship stores. And I think they had one in there, and I put it on and was playing Waltz of the Wizard, I think.
Okay.
And that game was a lot of fun. And it just was like, wow, okay, this is. Now, I do remember it was all pixelated. It looked exactly like you were looking through a screen door. It was wonky, but it obviously left an impression on me, because now I haven't gone back.
Exactly. No, that's quite cool. I mean, I explained my one earlier, and ever since I tried VR, my love for it just completely grew. Right, I'm going to attempt at pronouncing this username. Apologies if I butcher it. It's Shreyuyun. I think that's correct. Right, this is a more in-depth one, so this may take a bit of time for you to answer. What's going on with the Oculus OS? Sorry, hang on. What's going on with the OS Oculus wants to build? Any updates? A first-party OS would make link and optimization (battery and performance) much better, right?
It's one of those questions that's like loaded, because you could answer it just straight up, but then someone's going to want to go into Facebook is evil overlord and wants to control your entire life. You know, sure. It gets into those evil entity corporation. I don't know a super much update about it, but I'm 99% sure that the first time we see in Facebook operating system, it'll probably not be for the Quest. I think they're looking into AR glasses, mm-hmm. and I think that's where they're going to build it. I don't think they're going to implement it on this Quest. If they have one, they might try it on the next version, but I don't think the amount they'd have to do to tweak that for everything that's already on it, as well as then, I don't know how you could have your own operating system on the Quest, but you couldn't have your own operating system on the Rift S. Mm. And that's going to cause massive problems for cross-play, cross-buy, things like that. I just don't see it happening for VR for a very long time. I think it will happen. I think they'd be fools not to do it. Like, why wouldn't you want to own it all, have less regulation on it? You know, you control yourself more or less. But I don't think it's coming to VR. I think it's going to come to AR first. That's my guess.
No, I think that's a great answer, actually. Right, the questions are starting to roll in now. This is good. Right, so Diego has asked, did you ever fear of hitting a wall or your TV when you first got your VR?
Wait, what's that again?
Did you ever fear hitting a wall or your TV when you first got VR?
What do you mean, did I? Still do. Like, this shit's scary, man. I play right over there. I know no one can see it, but I play right over there. I got the camera here, my light here. I don't move those when I play.
Oh, man.
My chaperone. But I'll say this, like, I'm always nervous about hitting something because I go into it. I'm throwing those. I'm not taking time. But I don't know. I'm actually curious if anyone who plays VR that's watching now, or, you know, your experience. I find the more I play VR, the less room scale I find myself using. And I find myself staying, you know, I got the room to move. I generally will stay in like a 4x4 square and just get the job done there. So I find myself not walking as much in it. I don't know. Do you have that experience?
Yeah, I in fact, this is a really embarrassing story. My brother, who's actually here with me, might be watching this, and I didn't tell you this story. A long, long time ago, when I used to have my VR, I actually uppercutted a shelf that's actually next to here, which had my router and everything else off it. I can't even remember what game I was playing, and I just threw that and connected. And I thought, that felt very much like real life. And then I just heard, and I was like, ah. And then just lifted the VR headset and went, right, I'm going to carry on, because if I'm in another world, I don't have to deal with that. But yeah, one thing that I actually use now is, it's called a proxy mat. You may have heard of them. It's like a foam mat that's kind of got these raised areas actually on them. And to be honest, since I've used that, has made a massive difference with kind of knowing where I am in VR and stuff like that. And it made such a huge difference. So if anyone is interested in VR, I would highly suggest getting yourself a kind of VR mat. A proxy mat is one that's been sold that I think is pretty good. There are others available, but it makes a huge difference to just know where your surroundings are just by using your feet. But yeah, I kind of get room or distance anxiety, if you want to give it a phrasing. So,
that was real. I will say, though, if anyone gets into VR and they were trying to get like the old school headsets, like, you know, Generation 1, the just get your feet wet, the Vive 1s, like these bad boys, I have uppercutted walls. I have slammed these. Like, some people hate them, and they're not the best controllers, but like this one, I don't know if anyone here, definitely clicks.
Oh, yeah.
But it still works. Like, these things, I'm talking full-on haymaker Muhammad Ali going for the title fight win. Straight to the wall, right at a stud, and keeps on going. So as much as people hate the Vive ones, if you're scared of your walls, these are the best ones for walls.
Strong and powerful, that's what I like to hear. Right, I think we've answered that convincingly. Right, someone has
got Tanner. Can I just get Tanner on the camera?
So
the lighting.
Yeah, this is a very strong username. So Ginger and Paradise has asked, do you think VR is poised to make esports more engaging and entertaining to mainstream eyes compared to current esports? Here's hoping for Space Pirate Arena type esports production happens this year. Let's play some more Hyper Dash soon.
Yeah, I'm down with Hyper Dash. I need to get back in that game.
Yeah, it is a good game, isn't it?
It's a damn alpha. I'm sorry to get sidetracked, but it is an alpha that honestly performed better than most betas in a lot of games coming out these days. Like, fantastic job, Hyper Dash Alpha, like, devs. It's amazing.
Agreed.
But I don't know. The esports thing's going to be interesting. I think, and this is not shade on anyone, but I think it is true. It's going to take I think there needs to be some characters first that come out. Some big personalities.
A ninja-style character for somebody.
I'm not saying someone's always going to take this bad. Everyone who is in VR esports that I personally know, we are, it's the early days of VR, very mature, very adult, and not in a bad way, but like, and they have fun and get a blast. But esports are going to get big when the super young audience starts really jumping aboard. When the kids that, you know, 13 years old and above, like that range, that's like your esport. Viewership.
Yeah.
When people get millions of views, it's that. There's going to have to be a personality that steps out and is attracted to those to bring light to the scene first. Then that might be bringing some more traction. And then after that, I think it can be easily done, because you see, like, when I watch like a CSGO tournament or something, like those fine skill movements, like in the game, everyone goes nuts over it. It's fun to watch. Well, what if you watched a person have to do that? So it's not just a trigger. You're watching this person straight up for the people kill. Like, I've seen a CSGO video where someone kills 5 people in like 4 seconds, but all you see on the screen is boom, 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 and it's over. What if you actually had to see the person throw it, perfect gun pulls every time? That's a sight. Like, that's the Matrix.
I watched an Onward esports competition, and like, I mean, I've dabbled with Onward. That game is insanely difficult, but it's brilliant at the same time. So for context, Onward is, how can I describe it? A super realistic version of Counter-Strike is probably a pretty good demo.
It's as real to a military simulator right now, probably.
But
that game's so good. I think they also need a better game for esports right now.
I totally agree. And I think, well, I mean, to talk about esports growth when you have a a kind of poster child. Fortnite had this exact thing. Fortnite was already popular, right? And then I forget the kid's name. He won that competition and won like $1 million or something like that. The back end of last year. I mean that not only sent him but sent Fortnite into just this skyrocketing thing. And there was a brilliant thing that I saw that had concurrent users, and it was kind of before that happened and then after, because obviously the press caught into it and stuff like that, including the BBC. And you know, you kind of saw this huge spike in people signing up for Fortnite. So it just shows, as you said, when you have the right, I guess, poster child or something like that, that kind of encompasses everything about it, it just rockets everything up. And yeah, I think you're right. I think that's kind of what's needed for esports to take that next step in VR.
I think Onward obviously has a good scene, but it's very hyper competitive and it's a little bit of a slower game. I'm not sure how that would, it doesn't appeal to obviously a younger audience. I don't think that one's definitely much more of an older audience. That's the wrong word, but it's not going to appeal to what the Fortnite crowd has. You have Pavlov, which still has, you know, the pro scene, but still that one's doing pretty well. I don't know what game is needed, but something. Now, Population 1 coming this year, that could have a lot of potential. I don't know. I have to see how that game plays out, but I have high hopes for it. I think that game has a lot of potential, and the way that the devs have kept delaying it, but have never, even though they're delaying it, they've actually never given a promise, really. They're saying, like, it's going to be around here, and then they say, we're just going to move it here. And every time they say they're moving it, they're like, we're just going to keep working until it's ready. They don't make any excuses. It's not this and that. It's like, no, it's not ready. You'll get it when it's ready. And that's why I have a lot of high hope for that game, because they seem like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think, recently, obviously, Cyberpunk had been delayed and stuff. And it was quite funny seeing people go, oh, I'm really disappointed in this, that, and the other. And I was like, take a step back for a minute and just think of the level of detail they are trying to cram into a game that's not only going to run on current generation, but next generation consoles and, you know, kind of ray tracing graphics in PCs and stuff. So I was like, just take a step back and think, if they released this right now and it was really bad, you'd be more upset about it being delayed and being absolutely amazing. So it was quite interesting to see, especially on Twitter, this kind of like, oh, this is really bad, but it could be really great, but it's really bad, but this is going to be awesome. And it was just interesting to see this notion of negativity and this overwhelming positivity on top, just like crushing everyone down.
That's how it should have been. That's how it should be. So thank you, Internet, I think, for doing the right thing.
Indeed, they have done a good thing. Right, RockSalt9000, who's actually in chat right now, has asked for Eric. No, I'm kidding. if you were actually president, what would your first motion be? Good question. I like that.
Ooh.
VR for everyone. There we go. Good night.
I'll keep it on brand with VR only. I'll keep it PG. I would make VR insanely cheap. Ooh. That's what I would do. Because you think about it, like, this is more of a serious answer than I normally like to joke around with, but like, you could have the smallest like room in the world. You could have just a box. Like, you could be in Tokyo, just a box. You could have, you know, no money, no anything. Basically, just, you know, the basic needs, food, shelter, water, you know, that kind of stuff. But you able to somehow get a VR headset, literally the world opens up. You know, everything that you have no ability to have or do, is it physical? No, but at one point, what does it matter? If it gives you the same enjoyment, it doesn't need to be physical. If you can talk to someone across the world, they don't need to be there. It's the exact same thing. So I think that just gives a lot of people more opportunity. I'd make VR much cheaper.
I think that's a good point. Because I think once the price point, I think, is that close to being more people jumping onto it. I mean, the Quest is very close to that. I think if it drops a little bit more, I think a lot of people would buy into that. And that's going to come in time as components get cheaper, as more games come on board and stuff like that. So it's only a matter of time. But I think you raise a very good point, because that thing there is not just a gaming device. It's an overall entertainment device, right? And again, I had a couple of people over, as I said, on New Year's Eve, and not only did they play Beat Saber forever, I kind of showed them big screen, and for anyone who hasn't experienced big screen, it's a bit like going into a virtual cinema where you can actually sit in your own seat and there's other real people sitting next to you. And I just put on any old channel and stuff like that, and I think it was a 3D film being broadcast by someone, and I gave them the headset and they sat there and they just didn't speak, and I was like, you're right. And he was like, dude, I'm watching a 3D film in a 3D cinema with other people next to me. this is super surreal. And I was like, yeah, but it's super amazing, right? And he was like, yeah, when they come available, I'm definitely buying this. So again, just as an overall media device, whether it is gaming or kind of film and entertainment, it is fantastic. I mean, watching YouTube on it is brilliant. Watching Netflix and Amazon Video on it is fantastic. Other video providers available.
How do you feel about, everyone's done, you binge anything, you know, like today, it's a cloudy day outside, things about the rain, it's cold. You know, you can just sit in front of a TV and binge TV all day long and you'll have fun. But at least in my personal experience, after a while, you start getting a little antsy and you're like, man, you know, everyone wants to just talk to somebody for like a second. It doesn't need to be physical contact, but just you start realizing 6 hours watching TV, your psyche starts going a little off. And then one day there's a Discord group or a group called the VR Anime Society, and they just schedule anime viewing in big screen. And they invited me to go watch Akira, and I've seen that movie a billion times. So I was like, all right, let's go watch it with you guys. We didn't, you know, we talked before the movie started in the theater. Then the movie played, and it's an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours, whatever it is. Didn't really say a word during the movie. And then I said bye afterwards, but I felt good. Like, it still felt like I was around people. Like, I felt like I just went to the movie theater with a bunch of friends. We didn't have to talk because we're just all enjoying the movie, but I felt human presence and it made me feel pretty good that day. Just being around people, even though I was just in my room, there were two people from Denmark in there. I remember them because they were cool as hell. A couple of people from USA, there was someone from Australia. So a bunch of people were just watching a movie, all feeling like we're near each other, yet we're on opposite sides of the world. And it was pretty cool.
No, I agree. And coming just as a segue, if I just quickly do this, since you mentioned Australia, let me do that right. I think that's right. No, it's not. Maybe it's wildfires. Hang on a bit. Hang on. I can't even type. Hang on. Is that right? No, I have clearly got that wrong. I will find the link in a moment. But so we are currently raising money for the wildfires in Australia at the moment. I will get the link for you guys in a moment. So because of the devastation and everything that's taken place out there, we're actually raising money for that at the moment. So bear me one moment and I will put that in chat. But yeah, it would be great to actually raise some money to obviously help what's going on in Australia. And yeah, as Eric has said, it's funny how in VR you can kind of almost bridge together communities and feel that presence of someone in the room. I mean, I remember the first time using big screen and it felt very weird that I was sitting there next to someone else and they were kind of actually waving at me and I was like, oh, you're actually human. Oh, this is weird. And then I kind of looked around and then I looked behind me and there was just loads of people just sitting there looking down at me. And I was like, oh, yep. Hang on a minute, I need to shut up. So I forgot my my hand was on the talk button. I was like, whoops.
Have you played any Pavlov or shooters like that?
Pavlov, yes, I have. So I've played, as I said, I played Onward and that scared me to the point of how accurate that game is. So I remember going to the shooting ground and you know you kind of trial the different weapons and I was like, oh, how does this work? So I like emptied a clip and I was like, oh, click, oh, okay, so that's the mag that's come out, click that in, I actually have to do what you have to do in real life. I'm like, hang on a minute, this is too realistic. But the bit that scared me the most was when I picked up a sniper rifle with a bipod on it, put the bipod down and then realized that I actually needed to bend down to get right in line of sight. And if you don't look straight down that scope properly, you kind of get all the mirroring and it doesn't quite look right. So you have to look absolutely spot on down that sight. And I was like, this is insanely accurate. And the fact that you've got a radio and if people walk out of distance where they can hear your voice, you have to use the radio. And I was like, hang on a minute. There's too much going on here. And then I started a game. I thought, yeah, do you know what? I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty good at shooters. I can deal with this. First game, walked around a corner, nailed in the head. And I was like, yeah, okay, good. This is the level I'm playing at. Wonderful.
When you get good in those games, it's good. But like, I asked that because it's like on the opposite side, like where big screen makes you feel good. I've had some moments in like when you actually playing against people, like competitively, like you get some moments that make you think things. Like I was playing last night. And this dude's like running at me on my team. He's on my squad. And I see a guy coming behind him. And I'm just like waving my gun in the air, just physically, just being like, dude, watch out. Doesn't hear me. And I pop him. And I can just see the ball go right past his head, hit the guy behind him.
Oh, man.
And then he comes over to me with arms wide open, being like, thank you. And you're just like, how can you duplicate that? Like, that is the Matrix type, like having fun. And then on the opposite end, you'll get like a guy who drops his gun by accident and he just stands there flailing like, please don't shoot me, getting on the ground. I'm like, and I can't shoot him. Like, you build a connection. Like, it feels way more real than it should.
It's you're not as savage as me because I want to put a bullet straight in his head, but yeah.
Well, I let him touch his gun, and the second he touched it, you know.
It reminds me of, what was it? Is it a Fistful of Dollars? When he's like, just grab your gun, Colin now, and then he just like goes to grab it, and then Clint Eastwood turns up. Anyone who hasn't seen that film, go and watch it. Right, next question is from Bob. Interesting username.
Bob.
And it's great. And it's a very simple question for you, which is, why the beer?
Jesus. I'm glad, you know what? I'm glad this question came up, because I don't entertain it in the comments. Like, I do not respond to any of that. But I get like asked, like, when are you going to drink it? And my response would be to that, like, do you want me just to stop the video?
Yeah, hang on.
Hang on and like drink and just take a swig. Like, why would you want that? And then you hear, like, I have the lapel mic right there. So you just hear like a bunch of water sound gargle. Like, so that's why I don't do that. Then I get called, you know, why are you always drinking? So the way I make my videos is, I kind of talked to you about at the beginning, I make little notes for kind of the topics I want. And then for about 40 to 50 minutes, I just, and if it's a bad day, an hour, but good day, 30 minutes, I just riff and sit there. And that's, I just have one beer while I'm editing and filming. Because it's just, I'm sitting here in a chair just talking to the camera until I'm done. It's just a nice way to relax. You know, I work, I usually work about 60 hours a day or 60 hours a week for my day job. So when I get home and start recording, grab a beer, sit down, ramble to the camera.
Nice. Funny enough, someone actually just mentioned that the DVD thing hit the corner. So,
hell yeah.
also, people are saying that you have an IPA as your choice. So,
yes, I do like
that. There we go.
Does that make me like, does that make me a hipster or something? That's not the taste.
I'm not, I don't know. I'm not going to look into that. Right. The next question is from Neil. I don't know if that was real Neil from Retro Man Cave who's in chat. Oh, someone's actually clipped that, actually, DVD hitting the corner. Yes. Hilarious. Good. Good job. Who was that? Eric. Eric Gibson RPG, very good, very good.
Team Eric.
Right, so Neil has asked a interesting question. Now, as you and I both share tremendously well looked after beards, the question is, what are your top three beard care tips?
I don't put anything in my beard, so
just beer.
No, it's just yeah, it's just beer. I got one. We take a shower.
It's good.
Don't dry your beard off. Like, don't take the towel and dry it out. Just let it dry naturally. Like, you take out all the oil.
Yep,
that's what someone told me. That's what someone told me. I don't know. And I do trim it quite a bit, because when you start letting all the dead hair, the ends, then it starts getting a little rough around the edges. My wife will tell me that immediately. But yeah, that's really all I do. I don't do much for my beard, man. I don't do anything really. It's
now,
gonna grow.
Now,
Neil, you should have seen me about a year ago. This thing was Bushmaster, baby, and I loved every second of it. But the wife said, "You have fun?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "You love the beard?" I said, "Yeah." She says, "Cool. Well, it ends today. Trim it." I said, "All right."
Oh man. She led you down that route. Oh, that's hard.
She led me down that route, and it was brutal. She's a savage, and yeah, I did what I was told.
Good. I think that's strong. You got to keep your VR stuff, so I guess the bid was a good trade-off. So,
yes.
Right. Yeah, some people are mentioning that maybe you were born with it. I'm not going to finish off the rest of that advert, because I'll probably get sued. So the next question is from McGathry, who's also in chat. This is a long one. I've not actually read this. I hope he's not stolen my question that I was going to ask, but we'll see. Right. Given the different VR technologies, how long do you think it will be before we see the separation of the older tech not being able to run new games, e.g. Half-Life Alyx? How is it set for the Index and the Knuckle controllers, but it still runs on the Rift, panel tech, FOV, etc.? So I think it's almost two questions there, which are, yeah. How long do you think that cutoff is going to be between the old and the new tech kind of separate in terms of what can run? And then kind of looking at the different controllers and how you think it will kind of differentiate on each one of those.
All right. So hopefully I don't misunderstand this. But as far as the old tech versus the new tech, meaning staying within the VR headset realm, it technically wouldn't, in my mind, ever happen, because the headset at this point, when they're not standalone, when they're tethered, are just the conduits for the PC. The PC is ultimately the beast that's running the game.
Correct.
So with Half-Life Alyx, it doesn't matter what headset it's on, it's always going to run the same as long as the PC can handle it. But if we start getting to the point of the Quest successor, and then other companies start going now more standalone, at that point, yeah, some company might be better than the other, and one headset may be better to run it, which will then create its own version of a PC master race within a PC master race, I think.
Inception.
Kind of. Yeah, that gets a little weird there. But I'm more interested, what was the second part? Because that one I was really interested in talking about.
Let me just jump back. So the second part was
Controllers.
Is it set for the Index and the Knuckle controllers, but still able to run on the Rift? So panel tech, FOV, etc.
The controller debate, that's always bugged me. And now I think they're right, the people who bring up that there's like too many controllers and stuff like that. Like right now there's not too many, but like at most times, a game developer will know there's multiple controllers and plan for that. They're basically doing triple the work. So if somebody launches on PSVR, Index with the Knuckle support, and Rift, they are doing doing triple the work. I mean, it's stupid. And most of the time, these companies will, if they do triple the work, usually one of them is not as good as the others, usually the Index controllers. And some of them don't even have Index support. And most of the time, the community fixes it for them, like 99% of the time. Like when I got the Index controllers and jumped into Pavlov, it was not great. You had to. So it, now in Pavlov with these, I don't need to press very hard. Like I'm just resting. This feels natural. This feels good. I'm holding my gun. Back in the day, though, if there was any subtle tension let go, you dropped your gun. I had the grip and rip, and it was getting forearm workout every time.
It was arm day.
Yeah, it was arm day every day when I was playing VR. But I would like to see, I mean, my vision, there's too many barriers. It costs away a lot of money to make a game. Like the developers have a hard task. I would like to see controllers in the future start becoming more standard. Mm. I don't, you know, pick a trackpad or pick a thumbstick, pick a button, pick a trigger. I don't know. But make it so the developers can just make it work for everything, because the more different controllers are, yeah, you're individual. You have your own IP now. You have your own product. But you're not making it easier for anybody. And there's just so much variation. It'd be nice to see something standard.
I mean, I guess I'm just thinking about this from...
Hand tracking.
Yeah,
too,
that's exactly what I was coming to.
That's super far away to me. I don't think that's...
Yeah, I mean, I've played around with the hand tracking on that thing. And... don't get me wrong, it's impressive to think it's even that soon into its life that we actually have hand tracking. But I guess the long-term thing would be hand tracking, to kind of remove the controller element of it and then just use your hands. But I guess in some degree, you obviously lose the haptic feedback, the physical buttons and things like that. So it's going to be...
A lot.
Agreed.
With the Index controllers, again, when they first came out, Pavlov, it was not optimized, and every now and then I'd pull the trigger on an automatic weapon, and I'd feel the haptic, and then for some reason for a second or two disappear and come back, and it is off-putting, and it doesn't feel good. Shooting a gun with no feedback feels awful.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and that's kind of the thing I was sitting there, and I was like, well, hand tracking would work really cool if you've got a Netflix where you don't need that haptic feedback. Yep. Maybe it would add something to feel like you're clicking a button just to let you know that you've actually selected it. But yeah, for gaming, it's a difficult one, because even things like playing Beat Saber, just getting that little bit of notification that you've hit things is just it sets off a satisfaction thing in your head, and you know that you've connected. So yeah, it's a difficult one, but I think there almost needs to be a USB-C type evolution where everybody's just using the same thing. Come on, Apple, hurry up. Where everybody's unanimously using the same tech, the same button configuration, the same stick, but doing it in their own style. So I can definitely see the hand tracking being used for certain things, but I think you still need that haptic. Whether that eventual controller is actually some kind of glove or something that you wear that has haptic as well as hand tracking, I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of looking too far into the future, but that could potentially be a stopgap as well to as a fix.
I still think generally, though, some people really love some controllers, some people really hate some. They all get the job done. I haven't had a single controller I couldn't use and didn't like. I did the Vive controllers for a year, and I actually don't mind them. I really didn't have a problem with Vive ones. I think the controllers are all, they all work very well. I just, need my index to stop breaking. That's about it.
Yes, come on, Valve. Let's fix this for the community.
Yeah.
Right, we have a question that's kind of a little bit left field, so I'm going to throw this at you.
All
right. In your opinion, who is the best Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Well, not the new ones that they just made, because they look ridiculous and they're barely turtles at this point.
Right. Which one are you going to pick?
I'm going to pick Raphael.
Oh, man. Wrong choice.
Right choice. That's the brute. Raphael's the bruiser, man. He just wants to fight. He's got no responsibility other than to kick ass.
Yeah, but never mind. I'm not going to go down this, otherwise we're going to be here all night. But yeah, you've picked the wrong one. Never mind. So Neil from Retro Man Cave has asked another great question. So do you think Microsoft are missing a trick by not including VR as a launch feature for their new Microsoft Simulator? Can a game be retrofitted to work with VR successfully? Good question.
Well, yes to the second one, and that is always because the community ends up making it work for them. But yes, you can. I've seen some crazy. Someone just did The Witcher.
Mm.
It looked a little clunky, but he was playing The Witcher in VR. He made it work. They just made Grand Theft Auto work. Like, people can make these games work. If Microsoft missing out, I don't know. It's kind of like the Minecraft debate. Like, everyone says Minecraft, come to the Oculus Quest. Everyone wants it. Minecraft. It's like the top vote on everything. And they say they'll make so much money. And it's like, well, kind of. I don't know if they really will, because you look at the amount of users there are in VR. Then you have to make a game, and only a fraction of those users are going to buy it. And then you only make that much money. And time is money. So if we spend all this time to make this game, like if Xbox spends all the time to make it VR compatible, well, what could have we used those researches for other than VR?
True.
If we make $1 million here and we spent 8 months, we could have made $10 million here. So would it make a lot of people happy in VR? Sure, but it would make a lot more people happy somewhere else. So that's how I think Microsoft views it, is that like Minecraft does. Yeah, we could do it, and yeah, people would buy it. But more people would buy this over here, and we'll spend our time doing that. That's kind of how I always thought it was for them.
No, I think that's a good way of looking at it. I mean, in terms of games being retrofitted and made into VR, I mean, for anyone who joined my stream, I mean, I played Half-Life 1 in VR, which is something I never would have thought been possible. Yeah. And in fact, you can play Half-Life 2 in VR, which, for me, I can't wait to actually try. So it just shows, with the right amount of dedication and the fantastic community that we fortunately have in VR, people are doing some insane stuff in VR. You know, but whether it be take a game and completely rework it, or kind of shoehorn a fix into it to make it work. So to answer your question, Neil, I am almost positively sure that someone will probably find a way of making the latest flight sim work in VR. If they don't, I will be astonished.
Yeah, that one, I'm with you. I really think that one's just, I think it's easier probably too. That one's set up to be VR compatible. And then you got that guy working on, what's his name? It's not Nimsoni. Nimso, I think. He's working on Halo in VR.
Yeah,
and it looks really, it's coming along.
Yeah, it looks insane. I remember seeing that, actually. Right, VR Bug, who I mentioned earlier before we came on
show,
is actually in chat. So, welcome, VR Bug. It's good to see you here. A great VR enthusiast. And if anyone's not watching his channel, please go and watch it. There you go. Right, so another question that's come in is from Eric Gibson RPG, who I believe is in chat. He asks, do you feel controller implementation is what is stopping AAA devs from going into the market, sales aside?
No, I don't. I think it's all, I know I said sales aside, so I hate it's sales. It all it is. I mean, you look at all the games that came out last year that were really good, but just didn't, like, just went and died. Like, I know Asgard's Wrath got a lot of love, but when's the last time you heard someone talk about Asgard's Wrath?
That's true.
And which I think was game of the year last year. I know everyone loves Boneworks, and Boneworks was great. But what Asgard's Wrath did, the amount you could do, the detail, the length, and some people might say it's, like, repetitive after a while. Like, isn't every game repetitive at some point if you keep playing?
Agreed.
But I thought, once Asgard's Wrath out, that did something no other VR game has ever done in scope or size. Boneworks did amazing for what it brought, but like, Asgard was my game of the year. But even more of a bad example, or good example, Stormland. Like, that game disappeared, dude. Like, it came and went, and no one talked about it.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think it's... I think if those games were released like maybe 2 years ago when VR wasn't as mainstream and the hype wasn't necessarily around it, I think it would have been an equal playing ground. But I think one thing I found is if your marketing is on point, that yes. seems to be a massive driving force behind it. So I've bought into a few VR games where I was like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. Look at the marketing behind it and stuff like that. And you go and buy it and you're like, really? Like, this really, really? I've actually paid money for this. So, it's hilarious how getting that marketing right. But I totally agree. There are some absolute gems. You've just got to kind of sieve away kind of the marketing and the fluff and all that stuff and just look at it for what it is. And there are some fantastic titles.
Look at Beat Saber. I mean, it won Game of the Year last year and it didn't even come out last year. But, and people got up in arms about it. I do agree that it shouldn't have won. But can you blame them? It's everywhere. The marketing's insane. And I'm looking at these VR games that aren't doing as good with their marketing. It's like, okay, if you don't have the money to spend like Facebook does, because they have endless pockets, deep pockets, utilize the community. I don't see them reaching out to creators as much as they should. I don't see them utilizing Reddit as much as they should. Mm. All these things, like, if you can't afford Facebook type marketing, you got to go the opposite way and just blast it with the community. But I don't see it. Like Asgard's Wrath, Stormland, they didn't do much. I mean, hell, even Stormland did live streams and didn't answer any questions. Yeah. Like it was live streams about developing the game when everyone had for 3 months been like, when is the release date? When is the release date? Tell us, like, you're not doing it. Being an air of ambiguity in VR right now is not cool. Like, you can be scarce and like, other markets where you have a history, plenty of people, you can be scarce with your info and create drive that way. I don't think you can do that in VR right now.
No, I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. But like I said, I think the getting the marketing strategy around promoting it, because again, when it's done correctly, like Boneworks, like the hype behind that was just like my eyes shot out of my head when I just saw, especially people who were not necessarily into VR, just going, what the hell is this? This looks amazing, this, that, and the other. And just getting that marketing hype going just made that whole whirlwind spin. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, it is a fantastic game. But as you said, it's a fantastic game, but there are other games that probably in terms of what it did in terms of pushing the actual VR experience forward were clearly more advanced. But, yeah, getting that marketing right is so
important. They did terrific. Boneworks did everything right. The whole Node channel for as long as they did it. And they showed a lot of gameplay, and they showed mechanics. I think Boneworks and Stress Level Zero, all of them, they did it fantastic. The entire way they marketed that game was fantastic. They deserve all the success because that is how you build interest in a game that has no Facebook giant corporation behind it. They built it off, here's the game, this is what you can do, let's keep talking about things you can do, how good it is. And then, by the way, hey, creators, you're going to love this game because you can show all your people. Like, they built the community into the game almost.
So totally agree. And I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I regularly watch VR Bug, who's actually in chat, constantly play it. And again, like, even though while we're watching it, we're all learning new things about this game. So again, it comes back to what I said. Just the more you play it, the more you're learning these little brilliant things in that game. Right. Speaking of which, he's actually asked a question. So VR Bug asks you, are you sure about this? Do you lay Oculus Quests like eggs? Which I'm assuming is referring to your giveaways at the moment on your channel.
I feel like I do at this point, don't I?
Yeah, I mean, for anyone who is actually interested, if you go to any of Eric for President's actual YouTube channels, I believe you have a link in there for the giveaway. Is that correct?
It's usually in every pinned comment of the recent videos.
There we go. And also there will be other links to things like your Discords and stuff like that to keep in chat. If you do want to follow that, put /podguest into chat and it will deploy you some wonderful links where you can follow this.
You know, real quick, going back to that last question, notice that the biggest name games out there, but that's for a different reason. But, you know, Beat Saber that you see constantly. Gorn had a huge run. You had Blade and Sorcery still having a huge run. Boneworks having a huge run of popularity and success. You notice what all four of those have in common? A lot of content creation around those. That there's no one looking for VR. No one's actively going, hey, today I want to wake up and go check out what VR is. They're not.
No.
The only way they keep getting interested is they're basically getting beat aside the head by content creators who it's showing up in their recommendations over and over, and they skip over it every time, and eventually they go, what is this? And then they watch it. And then they start getting more interested. But I firmly believe that if people had, if the community had not done a lot of Beat Saber videos when Beat Saber came out, I don't think it would have ever been as big because it didn't get a lot of marketing.
No, I totally agree.
It was one of the first games like that and Gorn and Blade and, yeah, that and Gorn because Blade and Sorcerer was later. Gorn and Beat Saber was everywhere. Like that was all you saw it getting created. And it just beat you down, beat down. It made you want to try it. And look how well both those sell.
No, it's I agree.
You need to get the community involved.
I think the mixed VR aspect of Beat Saber as well. I mean, one of my friends, Rue, who works for Liv, I mean, when he originally showed me kind of how Liv worked and kind of what was possible, I was like, the moment you put this stuff on social media, it is going to go insane. And lo and behold, like, I think there was a video of someone playing a game in Mixed VR and Beat Saber. And I just looked at that video and I looked at that Twitter post and you could just see the retweets just constantly going up. And I was like, this is right. When the content is right and it's not necessarily about the tech, it's about the actual game and the enjoyment. That's when it goes mainstream because people are like, oh, the resolution of the screen, oh, this and all that. It's like, no, look at the game. Look at what is possible within this game and the enjoyment. Because like I said, you can go and pick that up and go and replay it. If you enjoy Legends of Zelda and Ocarina of Time, I mean, the graphics are hardly comparable to modern day gaming, but as a game, it's still fantastic.
It's so good.
And that same thing is in with VR as well. You know, there's games where, okay, graphically, it may not be top tier and look ray traced and look amazing. But in terms of the actual enjoyment as a game, Beat Saber is a perfect example of that, where, you know, graphically, it may not be brilliant, but it's a great experience as well.
You ever seen Merp TV play VR?
Yeah.
So I thought he doesn't do it as much anymore. At least I haven't seen it. I haven't actively looked. But I thought he did VR gameplay a different way that made some games, I think, a little better, where it definitely – he didn't play into being more exaggerated or having a lot of fun. Like when he played – I think it was Contagion, a zombie game. He barely was talking. He was moving slow. Like he was acting it out, making it even more reality. And I think more – I've been always curious about starting to do that, but I think – watching VR is hard if you're not using Liv to give a great experience. And I think that's an opportunity somewhere for some creators to like start acting a little more, like pretending to be the character in VR, make it even more real.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. I never thought of that. Not that I'm about to do that on stream before anyone gets excited. So,
it was Contagion. Yeah, if you go watch that video ever, like it is tense. Like it made me want to play that game, even though I'm not really... Now I tried it. It wasn't for me, but he acted like a zombie apocalypse, and it was amazing. It was amazing.
That's cool. That's a very clever way of looking at it, actually. Right. So I'm going to make this the last question. So I am going to lock off the question thing. So I do apologize if anyone has just tried, but I have just submitted a question. Oh yes, I've just seen it actually. This will be an interesting one for you. So from Game Boy Bryant, who's in chat, they have asked, tell me your opinion on the sixth generation. I'll try that one again. Tell me your opinion on the sixth generation of consoles being one of the gaming's golden ages. Interesting question.
Wait, say that again. We cut off.
So they said, tell me your opinion on the sixth generation of consoles being one of the gaming golden ages.
So wait, this generation right now?
Yeah, I'm trying to work out which generation the sixth generation is, because it could be different for everybody judges retro dates in completely different order. So I will wait until Game Boy Bryant has told me what they want in chat.
Yeah, I definitely want to know what he sees the sixth is, because I'm curious what that one is too.
Yeah. Because some people say, right, okay, so they have said the PS2, Xbox, GameCube, and Dreamcast era. There we go.
That was a good age. I really enjoyed the 360 era.
Oh,
yeah. I know not a lot of people like it, but that, like Xbox, I had a ton of games. Yeah, Xbox and PS2 was great. I guess that was really good. Yeah, he's making me question myself now. That Xbox and PS2 range was a really good time.
Yeah, do you know what? It was one of those ones where, you know, all of those were kind of CD-based, but... Well, the GameCube was, but they had those stupid little discs, which they should have gone full size with, but that's for a discussion for another day. But I think that was the real era when CD and DVD based media allowed developers to really open the gate to pushing things as far as they could. You know, there was a lot more full motion video, you know, graphics were being increased, there was a lot more being pumped onto those discs, and I think that era really set the benchmark of how far gaming could go, because all of those consoles, probably up to the latter part, were really being pushed. I mean, the Xbox especially was an absolute powerhouse, and some of the games, I mean, even recently, like I bust out the old OG Xbox every so often, if you play like Halo 2 on that, you sit there and go, this actually still looks really good, you know, on really old tech. So, but yeah,
it looked... Also, that generation had, I think, when LAN parties started coming around.
Yeah.
Not just the, hey, we have four controllers for this N64. I'm talking straight up, you know, 20 people in a house all connected. That was a lot of fun. That was very different than what you could do before that. And that was a good time.
I totally agree. And, you know, I remember the first time I used... Xbox Live on the original Xbox, and I was just like, this box that is sat in front of me is connecting to the world, and I can play people over the internet using a console, whereas before it was, you know, mainly PC, right? And at that point of that happening, I remember sitting there going, this is something very special that's happening right now, and it's only going to grow. And I was absolutely correct. I mean, I think at that point Xbox really did lead the way in console online gaming. Arguably, people would say they still are. But yeah,
I was always an Xbox kid.
Yeah, I mean,
up until the 360, and then I didn't go after that.
Yeah, at that point, I mean, the online service was just fantastic. I mean, I think I remember playing, I want to say Forza Online. I mean, that was amazing. In fact, there was a very sneaky hack that you could originally do to the original Halo, to actually play that multiplayer, which was quite amusing. So yeah, to actually play that online was just a really surreal experience. Like you said, to actually have that human interaction with someone that, you know, is anywhere in the world, and then to talk to someone as well was just like, hang on a minute, this is too advanced. Like, my head couldn't compute with that at the time, but it was amazing how much advanced ahead of its time was. Probably the one that is always close to my heart is probably actually sitting down there, which is my Dreamcast. I mean, that thing was so ahead of its time, and it's such a shame it didn't get the love that it deserved. It had a broadband adapter, you know, web browsers, keyboards, you know, an amazing online community, and which to some degree actually still exists till today, where people are still playing Quake 3 Arena on that bad boy. Like,
I never got to play a Dreamcast. I literally never touched one in my life.
Well, if you come over to the UK, you're coming to MMD HQ, and it is happening. So there we go. But yeah, it's amazing how that thing, like, really is, even till today, is still such a brilliant machine. It just that era really started to really push things, I think. And as I said, each
got a sweet spot for 360 though, because that gave me my love. Gears of War Online.
Oh, I man. Stop. Oh, I man. Now. Stop. Now we're talking. In fact, Gears of War Online on the 360 has got me one of my favourite moments ever, which was me and my friend were playing it, and we managed to glitch the game and double chainsawed this guy. And and there was a point where we just sat there and went, that may be the most amazing thing ever, and we just didn't talk to each other for the rest of the game.
That game, I always thought the shotguns were probably one of the most satisfying online weapons I've ever played with in Gears of War 1. Just that shotgun online was too much fun.
Especially when someone just walks around the corner and you're like, yep, bang, oh, and there you go, you're in Swiss cheese mode now. You just splattered everywhere.
Bouncing all around.
Or tagging someone with a grenade and then just running off, which was hilarious. Yes. So,
God, I love that game.
I feel like I want to go and play it now. Damn it, Eric, damn it. I'm trying to get back into VR and you're making me do this. Damn it.
I'll be on tonight, man. If you want to play, I'll be on Pathfinder. It's probably way too late over there.
Oh, man. I think Eric's just throwing down a challenge there. He won't, because he will kick my ass, I can assure you that. Right, so I'm now going to turn to myself and ask you a question while I try and not wreck my room. And that is, what in the next 12 months has got you the most excited about VR? Whether that be titles or tech or anything like that.
That's easy. Half-Life Alyx.
Yes.
I gotta and I'm not going to fanboy over it. Like, Half-Life, I love 1 and 2, but I am not a Half-Life, like, fanboy. Like, I always had fun with them, but it's not the number one title in my mind from a Valve standpoint. Like, I would have loved, like, if they had said Team Fortress 2 or Portal over Half of Alyx first, I would have been hyped. Like, I would love a Portal, although I don't know whose stomach can handle that right now.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, but Team Fortress 2, I would die if that came in VR. I would love that. But Half-Life Alyx, it's going to be, I think, a pretty pivotal point. I'm more interested. I didn't want to play it. I'm going to have a blast playing it, but I'm very interested to see how it plays out. I think it's going to say a lot. I mean, you have Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners coming out.
Yeah.
This coming week, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
And then that's it until Half-Life Alyx, that I know of, that's a big name title. And Half-Life Alyx is not coming out in March. I put a lot of money on that.
Hmm.
I mean, it's Valve. it's Valve. They've already canceled the one show they were supposed to do at the Game Awards. The word was that the teleportation was, or the smooth locomotion still wasn't working right. I don't think they're going to have it ready by March, which is fine. I don't care. But if that game is sold out, $1,000 headset, like $1,000 headset, and the game is not even out, only one person, you know, two or three people have played it and talked about it. We've seen very little gameplay at all. And people are spending $1,000 on a game that just by name.
Agreed.
I'd like to see how that plays out, because if it crushes it, VR is golden for a while.
I agree. And funny enough, I mean, at work, people were talking to me because they kind of know I'm a VR enthusiast. I'm probably the only one in the office who's majorly hyped. And then the moment Half-Life Alyx got announced, the Monday I walked into the office, everyone was like, so yeah, VR, talk to me about it. I'm like, oh, now you're interested. How funny that, isn't it? And then we had like this, it was weird. I was like the Yoda of the office, because I was sitting in the middle going like, VR, you're like, yes, And it was like, suddenly everyone was asking me all these questions about VR. So it just shows with the right title, it just, yeah, I'm very excited about it. But to be honest, like The Walking Dead next week, I'm very excited about that.
Well, it looks good. It looks really good.
The fact that I can grab a zombie's head and then just shove a knife in its neck, glorious. Yep. Thoroughly looking forward to that. But I mean, the only thing that worries me about that game is its longevity. I mean, I said before about going back and replaying it. I'm hoping it has a lot of replay value and there's a lot of things that you can do. But again, you know, there could be a multitude of different ways of doing levels and, you know, finishing zombies off and stuff like that. So that's probably the angle maybe you could go out with its replayability. But as a game, to have a well-known TV show like that, actually have a game that's based around VR, and I mean it looks like it's going to play great as well, so I'm very excited about that. But yeah, Half-Life, I'll be honest, did make me get a little bit excited. Probably
I'm a little nervous, man, with Half-Life. Like, honestly, if it does great, which I'm praying it does, VR is golden for a while. If it does bad, man, all those naysayers that, you know, want to say VR is dying, there's all the ammo you need in the world. If that game fails, That's bad news.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, hang on, I've just managed to pop my headset out. Hang on, give me a minute. that's a new one for my podcast. I've never actually managed to do that ever again.
Wouldn't be streaming me without some difficulty.
No, exactly. Right? There we go. I've managed to reattach myself, so that's good. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of this, I feel like a lot of weight has been ported onto this game.
So much.
Necessarily or unnecessarily, I'm not quite sure. But I think because they haven't said, here's Half-Life Alyx, here's a 2D version, here's a VR version, or a normal version of that. I think that would have been okay, but because they've just gone exclusively VR, has just put the spotlight completely on all of us as such, as kind of advocates for VR and stuff like that. And for Valve to take that risk is huge.
It's got so much risk to it. It's got to be good. You've got to beat so much expectations. Like, they say it's going to be about 8 hours, and some people are going to beat that in one session.
Exactly.
They say it's short, but that's not a negative. Like, an 8 hour, it's all in context. An 8 hour VR game is pretty damn good. If it's a solid 8 hours, that's amazing. And then you got these ones that, you know, like Pavlov, people could put 200 hours in it, because it's always about just trying different things, and people got to stop rushing through games. Just enjoy it. Boneworks, you know, you could do that game for 50, 60 hours. It just depends on exploring and having fun. But if you just want to beat a game, it's going to disappoint you. So Half-Life Alyx just has a lot of expectations set, way too much. It's got a lot of people spending a lot of money to play it.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of expectations from people expecting PC characteristics, like your traditional gaming characteristics, and they're going to bring that to their VR mentality, which they need the disconnect. They need to see what it is. And it's got a lot. I'm rooting for it. I will be the biggest advocate of Half-Life Alyx when it comes out.
I agree, and I will be firmly behind it. And as you said, I really, there's still that nervousness that sits in the pit of my stomach, but I really hope that from what I've seen so far, and with the likes of Valve working on it, obviously they know what they're doing in VR to some degree, and I really hope that what they're going to pour into it is going to deliver the knockout blow to finally say to people, VR's good, and here's a big stamp to put on it.
Yes, I hope so too.
Right, so I think I'm going to call it there. What I'm going to do is hit that, and there is Eric's YouTube channel and his Twitter, so please go and make sure you follow it. As I said, Eric makes fantastic YouTube videos. I approve of them. He definitely approves of them. And his Twitter is a meme fest, which, if you know me, I love a good meme and VR.
Yeah,
he does post over things as well. But if you want good stuff, make sure you go follow Eric there. So I will wrap it up there. For everyone who's dropped into chat, I saw lots of follows and I think a few people subscribed and stuff like that. Thank you very, very much. It's great to be back in 2020, and I had my first international guest, ladies and gentlemen. This is a big time. This is the big time. See, we're connecting overseas. It's what we're doing. We're using the power of the internet, as we spoke about earlier. But no, Eric, thank you very, very much. I greatly appreciate you taking the time. Stay on the line, and I will talk once we get off the air. But for everyone else who joined me live, or if you're watching this on demand, thank you very, very much. All of Eric's details will be put into the description, or they're currently in chat somewhere. But yes, thank you all very, very much for joining me. Me, Machine Dean, signing out, and I'll let you get back to your Saturday. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. See you later.
Adios.